You're listening to JD and Tammy Rucker as we deliver the NOQ report, or as we like to call it, the NOQ report. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and enjoy.
If you haven't heard the name Bol Gaidang, you're not alone. It's unfortunate because he was getting a lot of publicity. A lot of people were interested in mainstream media in his story just a couple of years ago because he is a South Sudan refugee. Of course, back then when President Trump had put what they could call the Muslim ban in place, they were scrambling. Mainstream media was. Democrats were. They were scrambling to find examples of, oh my gosh, look, here's an example of a person that President Trump wouldn't allow to travel to the United States because he's a racist. You know, put aside the whole terrorism aspect, or the fact that it wasn't a quote-unquote Muslim ban, or the fact that the Bol Gaidang is actually a Christian. Okay, so yeah, it didn't fit, but they did like him because his story is compelling. It's something that I believe could be made into a very good Hollywood movie. Not that there's such a thing recently, but if Hollywood would actually look at his story, try to get creative instead of doing all these remakes and doing all these virtue signaling stories that they tend to do nowadays, they would actually probably find something that's extremely interesting. At the age of 7, he was kidnapped from his village by the Mujahideen. They came in, raided it, killed a bunch of people, murdered, raped, and then kidnapped the children, hundreds, marched them 250 miles with very little food, no water, no shoes, marched them to their camps where they were enslaved. Deng was enslaved for nearly a decade before one day he was finally able to escape. He was tending the cattle of his captors when he saw a passing train. He made a run for it. He bolted. He hopped on that train and worked his way into Cairo. Eventually, he was able to come to the United States, approximately the age of 17, after nearly a decade of enslavement. He was able to come to the United States through a refugee program. He was brought in at the age of 17, brought in by a Virginia family that had worked through their church, brought him, gave him home, acted in many ways as his parent, parent that he had never really had in his formative years. They loved him, and they treated him with the respect that he deserved, not just as a victim, but as someone who fought. He was a fighter. Now, they weren't exactly his adoptive family. They were left-leaning Christians, and they weren't happy that when one day he came home with a Bush Cheney bumper sticker. But they appreciated him. This was back in 1999 when he came to the United States, and since then he has been building his life, learning English, getting his degree, building organizations within Virginia, organizations that can help fellow refugees, organizations that can promote the faith, promote Christianity. When I was shown this story, when somebody brought it to my attention and offered the interview, I thought, sounds interesting, you know, the idea of a former slave who is now running, attempting to run, to be the next president of South Sudan. I thought, this is great. Let's talk to him. But when I did my research, I did find that after lots of attention, you know, back in 2018-ish, 2017 even, a little bit into 2019, it stopped. You weren't seeing stories about him. And I wondered why. And that's when I realized that, you know, once we got into 2020, something changed. He started saying something that they didn't like. No, it wasn't his politics as far as, oh, you know, yes, he's a Trump supporter. Yes, he's this, that, or the other. But again, your mainstream media picks and chooses their battles. And here's a man that represented what they believed was an example, a shining example of why the quote-unquote Muslim ban against this Christian, but whatever, Muslim ban shouldn't stand. But the interviews dried up. It wasn't because of anything that happened in South Sudan. His prospects continue to grow every day. He's continuing to gain support. He's talking to military leaders down in South Sudan. But something changed. His narrative was not the one that they wanted to hear. Had nothing to do with his politics. Well, I guess in a way it does. But the thing that changed is that he voiced opposition to Black Lives Matter. And that, folks, if you're a Black man or woman, if you're a person of color who voices disagreement with the cultural Marxists, the neo-Marxists of Black Lives Matter, then you are done. You are not going to get another interview from mainstream media ever again, because that's not what they want to hear. They no longer want to hear his story of actual persecution at the hands of actual killers, murderers, rapists, people that go through, take what they want, including other people, enslave them, force them to do their bidding. This is persecution. Okay, that's the real stuff. I'm not saying there's no persecution, that people of any color, of any race, do not experience persecution here in the United States. We do. Some people do. But it's nothing compared to other places around the world, which is why Ding has voiced his perspective that if Black Lives Matter, then shouldn't all Black Lives Matter? Doesn't that, you know, is it only relegated to the dozen or two dozen young black men who are shot unarmed by police every year? That stat is, you know, I've been called a liar multiple times for noting that the number of actual young unarmed Black men shot by police in any given year is in the, you know, one to two dozen range. You ask people, and one of our former guests, Savannah Hernandez, she actually went around one day, made a video where she's asking these Antifa and Black Lives Matter and just leftist activists in general, you know, how many people do you think, how many young black men unarmed are shot by police in any given year? And the lowest number that we heard was hundreds. Most of them said thousands. That's the perspective. And that's not the perspective that mainstream media or Democrats or the left or anybody else, other than those of us who seek the truth, nobody wants that narrative out there. It's it's an ugly narrative as far as they're concerned. Unfortunately for them, it's also the truth. The truth is that there aren't, I mean, again, I don't want to be accused, oh, you don't know what you're talking about. There is persecution. I get it. There's definitely persecution. But compare it to what's happening elsewhere in the world. In some cases, these beacons of hope that, you know, especially in Europe, that Black Lives Matter and anarcho-communists and Antifa, they always point to these other models. These, you know, look at this socialized medicine. Look at this anarcho-communism that's working over here, over there. Invariably, they always look at just the positives. You had Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, congresswoman from New York, just the other day saying, you know, you look at, I think she was talking about Sweden or Norway or someplace in Europe where their McDonald's employees are making like $22 an hour. Okay, fair enough. What she doesn't describe or discuss is the tax structure. What she doesn't discuss is the authoritarianism. They like to claim that these Norwegian nations are socialist. Yes, the Norwegian nations, they're like, no, we're capitalist with heavy emphasis on social programs. They say that's the model they want, but that's not how their actions, the actions of the left here in America, that's not how they portray them properly. But I digress. I could talk about AOC or any of the leftists here all day. I want to talk about South Sudan. I want to talk about Black Lives Matter. I want to talk about all of these things. And he will be coming up here actually very soon. So he'll be joining me here in a moment. But first, I want to give a couple of quick shout-outs. Number one, to Special Ops. You know, we've been working with them now for over a month. They've been getting us on terrestrial TV. We're now technically international. They have a Canadian station that has picked up the Knock Report. It's just an amazing, amazing thing. I feel so blessed for what they've been able to do on the terrestrial side. And of course, Freedom First Network. We did a redesign. I have started putting, those of you who have been following, I did finally start putting our new content up there. I'm going to backfill the old content. Knock reports are going up on Freedom First Network just as quickly, I mean, simultaneously, as they do on NOQReport.com itself. Now, we do have some minor changes coming. Number one, we are making the shift. Okay, big tech. I'll tell you a quick story. Every time we have a controversial topic that we're going to be talking about, whether it's voter fraud or vaccines or climate change or whatever, Jeff Dornick, the co-founder with me at Freedom First Network, and I, we discuss, you know, is this the one? Are we going to get banned on YouTube? Again, we've already been banned once. our big channel is already banned. Okay, whatever. You know, or is this the one that's going to take us down on Facebook? Knock Report has been censored on Facebook before multiple times. We've had been fact-checked and this, that, or the other. Our reach on the Knock Report Facebook page has been very, very bad. But on the Freedom First Network Facebook page, so far, we've been okay. We're you know, we still think that at any moment, the ban hammer is going to be coming down on us. Same thing with Periscope. We've already lost one Periscope channel. We've lost a separate, you know, the Knock Report Twitter account has been gone for a while now. Ever since the same day that President Trump got banned, so did the Knock Report Twitter account get banned. November 7th. I'm sorry, January 7th. Sorry, switching my months. Spotify, as you guys know, many of you know that Spotify banned us. They didn't just ban us. They actually proactively went out and talked to the people at Transistor, talked to the people at Captivate, pair of podcast hosting services who subsequently also kicked us off their platforms. Now we're at Spreaker. Lord willing, we'll be able to stay there. I like Spreaker a lot. It's funny. The getting kicked off of Transistor and Captivate have become blessings because Spreaker is in almost every way, it is superior. I love it. Okay. It's good stuff. I see it's a green screen. And for those who don't see the video, my shirt keeps disappearing, so I just become a floating head in the virtual studio here at Knock Report Studios. That's kind of weird, so I'll try to not move around, or I don't even know why that's happening. Hopefully that won't happen during the interview, or else I might actually scare Bald Guy Dang. He's like, oh my gosh, your head is floating in the middle of the Knock Report Studio. That's really weird, dude. So in an effort to basically to just give the proverbial middle finger to big tech, we are going to be pulling out of YouTube proactively, Facebook proactively, to some extent Twitter. And I want to be clear, you know, Twitter, it's not about pulling out of Twitter. It's about not posting our full content there. We're going to be posting snippets on all these areas, 1-2 minutes, I don't know. We'll make that decision later. To find our full content, we're asking those of you who watch, if you want to watch the video, we're still going to be on Apple. I know that's big tech. But Apple Podcasts thus far has not banned us. Pandora, iHeartRadio, you know, Spotify is the only one that has banned us amongst the big tech podcasting networks. So we still do encourage you to go there. And just as a quick reminder, make sure that you subscribe on Apple Podcasts, because subscriptions, that is how they rank us. You know, we've been ranked as high as in the 30s. Sometimes when I don't do a show for 3 or 4 days, is what happened last weekend, We fall off the top 200 list on Apple Podcast News commentaries. So we like to stay on there. And the way that we are able to do that is through subscriptions. So if you do subscribe, obviously it's free. If you have an iOS device, subscribe to Knock Report, NOQ Report on Apple Podcasts, and that will help us to move up in the rankings. The higher we are in the rankings, the more views we get, the more, I guess, downloads, listens, whatever. And the more likely we are that we'll be able to beat Joe Walsh and other show hosts that have a quote-unquote anti-American tilt to them. We are very pro-America. America first here at Knock Report. Okay, so let me get to the big news. Well, that's not really big news. The big internal news. We are going to be putting all of our content, not just the Knock Report podcast, but also Let's Talk Right Now. Also, Freedom 101 with Jeff Dornick. Two Mics. Two Mics show has been exploding on sites like Rumble. Okay. Federalist Faction, Battlefront Frontline with Dustin Faulkner, The Mindy Thomas Show. We've got all these shows over at Freedom First Network. And freedomfirstnetwork.com is still going to remain. I don't want to make it sound like we're taking that down. But from a social, from a community perspective, we're moving everything to locals. It's FFN. Okay. FFN stands for Freedom First Network. www.locals.com. This platform, created by friends of Dave Rubin, a classical liberal who used to be a hardcore leftist, or so he thought, until he started looking into it and realized that, hey, freedom of speech, that actually makes more sense. Why are we suppressing people? So while I don't consider him to be a true conservative, he is a classical liberal. He does believe in the rights of us as people. He promotes that, and I greatly appreciate that. And I greatly appreciate ffn.locals.com. It gives us the ability to communicate directly with our audience. We can put podcasts there, articles, and of course, videos. So we're going to be hosting all of our stuff over there. Go to ffn.locals.com, and join the community. We like to talk to people over there, and we do manage it directly. So if you communicate with us there, we will communicate back with you. All right, let's get to Bull Guy Dang. But first, let's talk coffee.
Can you smell it? It's your favorite freshly ground coffee brewing in your favorite cup. If you're anything like me or my family, coffee is essential for our mornings. And even more essential is good quality coffee. Well, Freedom First Coffee is our preferred choice. Made from organically grown beans from Mexico and Peru, that are then roasted here in the USA. So head on over to freedomfirstcoffee.com and choose our Founders Blend in medium or dark roast, ground or whole bean. That's freedomfirstcoffee.com. And make sure you use promo code NOCK, that's N-O-Q, for 10% off your order. And if you really want to be a freedom lover, choose a monthly subscription so you will never be without your Morning Joe. Again, that's freedomfirstcoffee.com.
Our next guest is currently campaigning for president of South Sudan and is the leader of the Kush Democratic Majority Party. He lives in the United States and has been here since 1999. He is also an ex-slave. We are pleased, blessed, and very honored to have Bull Guy Dang join us today. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. You know, when your information came across to me, I thought, my goodness, you know, with everything that's going on, this is something, your story is a story that the people need to hear, not just here in the United States, but also around the world. Could you start by just telling us your experience? You know, when a lot of people in the United States say, oh, you know, I'm a slave to this, I'm a slave to that, but you actually experienced true full-blown slavery. Can you tell us more about that, please?
Yes. Thank you so much. Actually, I was a former slave. I was kidnapped in my village when I was a young boy, 7 years old. I was marched about 250 miles away from my village to the Western Sudan at the time. Took us about 5 days to a week walking without food, no water. And then the master, they were so brutal, they beat up the young people. And also there was a lack of language barrier because the most the slave master, they did not speak the local language. Most of us speak only the Africa traditional language, our mother tongue, but we didn't know how to speak Arabic at the time. And most of the kidnappers, they were the Arab influence language, they speak Arabic. And majority of them, very much all of them, they were Muslim. They called Mujahideen. Somehow you call them Al-Qaeda in wider view. There was an organization that was actually funded by the government of Sudan to go and terrorize the African villages and kidnap the children and the young women to the slave and sell them to the markets. So the journey was brutal journey. It was not an easy journey. I spent more than 3 years in the captivity. Then sooner or later, I was able to manage to escape. I made it out somewhere in 1990, and then I made myself to the refugees camp. It was organized by the Catholic Charity at the time. And then about 3 to 5 years later, 4 years later, I was able to manage again to escape again to Egypt. Because actually the Islamic government of Sudan do not want the Christian to organize, or maybe have the African Christian that was seeking a humanitarian in their country. And from that time, actually, Osama bin Laden was kicked out from Saudi Arabia and actually was welcome in Khartoum. And he refused not to accept any other religion in Khartoum in Sudan, except only Islam. Those who believe in Islam, they only actually should be allowed to live in Khartoum. And that's why we ran away to Egypt. From Egypt, I was able to find the United Nations, the refugees program. And then they explained my case to them. And they actually worked on my case until they brought me to the United States in 1999.
That is very, it's heartbreaking, but it's also very impressive being able to go through that. So when you were taken captive by the Mujahideen, when we think of slaves, we think of, okay, so good living quarters or bad living quarters, either way, but they're essentially workers. Were you like a worker for them, or were you just a brutal toy that they would just beat all the time, or what was that experience like?
They brought you, I mean, those who actually, the intention why they enslave Africa indigenous people is to take them away from their culture, origin, so they can become Arab and they become Muslim. And also they don't allow the older to leave, they kill the elderly. The only race, if you are 15 all the way down to 7 years old or to 5 years old, you can survive to live, and they make you work hard as well. Because sometimes you can do the house labor, and you can clean the house. You can also, if you are a lady, you can cook for them. If you are a young boy, you can take care of the cattle or maybe the goats. Some dogs in the house or other things that, you know, they are privileged to have in their houses. And most of the slaves, they didn't get food enough. They didn't get the treatment enough, like medicine. A lot of them, they die from the hard work level, and they didn't make it. They didn't survive. Young ladies, they end up being married to their masters. They didn't make it to run away like me. I was lucky to run away, but the young ladies, they were vulnerable. They cannot run away. That was the situation. You get beat up every day that you made a little mistake, you get beat up. Sometimes you have a flood, you have nowhere to sleep. So you can, if you get a blanket to sleep on, that actually you are blessed to have that. But most of the slaves, they sleep on the floor without any food sometimes, or they have the chain in their legs until you become normal, until you become comfortable with them, and they know you are not going to run away again. That way they can treat you and give you a little bit of assignment. You go to the plantation to work for them. If you are a lady or you are a young man that willing to cultivate the food for the masters. So these are the situations we have been. We have been beat up. You have a scar in your leg. You have a scar in your body. You have a scar in your back. That have been the beat up that we went through as the young kids. Most of my generation, they didn't make it. A lot of them, they died. A lot of them also, they converted to Islam. A lot of them, they become Arab. They are no longer recognized their identity when they come from. When actually you're taking the shell away from their mothers, and they're still young, 5 years old, and they grow up in a different society, they will never know where they will come from. And they don't even know where their mother or dad. They become fled in their society. And most of them use to go back and fight their own African origin, and also to exercise their slavery as well, because when they grow up, they will see themselves as the Arab and they are Muslim, and they have to go and do the same job that their masters do. So it become a business.
That is very, very interesting how it's a completely, it's almost like an ecosystem in which, you know, there's just, as long as they have a constant flow of people, of slaves, they can just continue to maintain it like you said, a business. Tell us about the presidential campaign for South Sudan.
Yes, I've been campaigning since 2017. I have learned that the country need me and need my skill, because I've been in America for 20 years now. And actually, I learned a lot. It's feeling that I can go and help the people, because South Sudan have been at war, and we got independent in 2011. And we have South Sudan find themselves out with the corrupt official who have no way forward to move the nation forward after we got independent. And then the country gained independent through the support of the United States of America. The American government at the time, being the Bush administration, George W. Bush, and then also the Secretary of State, Condoleezza Rice, and also Colin Powell, and the Anglican Christian of the South of America, actually they have united and pushed the Bush administration to do something about the case of South Sudan, because the Christian Africa have been persecuted for a long time, since 1950 to 1980, and the war has been going on for too long. After Osama bin Laden leaving the country in Sudan, America was able to have a wake-up call, because 9/11 was caused by Osama bin Laden. That actually took the Bush administration to move forward and have the South Sudan to get independent. So the country lacked a leadership with democratic system, a leadership because people of South Sudan, they are more democratic. The nation of South Sudan, they broke away from Islamic authoritarian, because mostly they are majority Christian, and they want to see a Christian nation that build in democracy values and build in education and a good way, and human rights have to be respected. So these are the things that made me to step up in 2017 and campaign. And I campaigned there, top campaign, and then sooner or later, the dictator actually postponed the election supposed to take place in 2018. And that now I've been pushing for election to be called, and I met with different representatives and other, even the State Department at the time. So we were pushing for election to be called within 90 days, because we know people are dying, people are starving, they have no food to eat. The criminal, the warlord are taking away the money from the people. The humanitarian money that Americans contribute, more than $14 billion, have been taken away by the criminal warlord leaders. And the people left with nothing. They left with no development in the country. They left with no health facilities. They don't have road infrastructure. They don't have education system in place. So these are the things made me to step up and be able to go back and help the nation to move forward. Now we have two options to make sure the campaign have to go according. If the 90 days could not met and internet community cannot call election, the people of South Sudan also, they're willing to step up and do what they call public uprising, so the president can resign, because he cannot do anything at this time around.
Do you think that, you know, your tagline for the campaign, victory is our destiny, can you win? I mean, can you win this election? Number one, can you have the election? And then if you do, will you be able to win?
Yes, indeed. Actually, if election is called today, or maybe next month, even 5 months from now, I will be the president of the country. I would mobilize a top campaign. I mobilize the young people. I mobilize the women, I mobilize the churches, I mobilize the youth in various sections, the sports, the Baramai, the sheep, the sheepdom in the community, the military also, they side with me as well, because the military actually, they've been going on for more than 2 years without getting paid, and they cannot take care of their family. The public servant, they are not getting paid, and the war actually started in 2013. So the country actually out of money, running out of the resources. The resources are there, but the leaders are the ones taking away the resources from the people. So yes, indeed, I'm going to be that leader, because no question about it. If also they did not call election, the public uprising, if I go today to the ground, people will get out in massive numbers, and then the president will demand to resign. So I am indeed that type of kind of leaders coming up to bring the market in the country. Because a lot of people, they're seeing my skill being in America for too long. I have an idea how to make democracy work in the country. I make sure that the human rights have to be respected. I will also make sure that the freedom of speech have to be allowed. The journalists have to be free to actually do their work and to educate the public. So very much, yes, indeed, I am going to be that leader with no question about it. Because actually, I have 90% of the population not supporting me.
That is amazing. As we've learned through so many regimes in the past, they have been able to to hold off, you know, hold off elections or to cheat. We've seen it happening in Venezuela, for example, where what appeared to be what should have been a clear victory for the opposition side was essentially allegedly stolen. But you have something that you had mentioned in there, and you talked about it just briefly, but I want you to expand on that discussion. You mentioned that you have the support of the military because they haven't been getting paid. The military is the key. You know, you can have all the people behind you, but if you don't have the military behind you, there is no chance. You've spoken to the military, and they are willing to back you, yes?
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. The military actually, bear in mind, they want to see somebody with different experience, somebody that could develop the country. The military even have no uniform at this time around. The wow. military families, they cannot survive because the country, the government, they cannot provide the training to the military. So the military, bear in mind, are hopeless. They need somebody that can actually reform the military to make it a national army, because now we have the tribal army where the group actually break away based on tribal line. So the South Sudan do not have to be built a national army that have to be trained with one nationalism to love the country, to defend the country, not to defend the tribes. So what we have now, we have a leader who actually instigating the war. So the military have broke apart to defend a tribe only, no longer defending the nation. And that's why the most of the military, they are not happy with the way the direction the country is gone. And that's why they need a new leadership. And I have, like what I said again, there are so many groups in the country that's supporting us. The women organization, the youth organization, the churches organization. I mean, all of them, they are rallying behind us because they will see us as the hope that can bring the nation to a right direction. So very much, yes, I get support from the security team and all of them. They actually communicate their message to my team leaders. We have chapters all over East Africa. I have also chapters in the country in South Sudan. And that's why the leader, Salva Kiir, which is the head of he's the president of the country now, is afraid of my leadership because he knew that if he call election today, he's going to lose. And he cannot even afford to rig election because the election now, the international community, they want to put pressure on him. The African Union, the United States, the United Kingdom, the United Kingdom of Norway. And this can go on and on and on. And also the United Nations, a lot of these organizations, they want Salva Kiir to resign and they want him to leave because actually it creates long suffering to the people of South Sudan. Now the people, the war leaders and the international community realize that this man has time expired and he has to go.
Sounds like he definitely needs to go. You have lived in the United States for over two decades. You've seen the good and the bad that we have here in our form of government. What is the first thing? What is maybe not necessarily the first thing, but what is the most important thing that you would like to bring to the people of South Sudan that you have experienced here in the United States? What part of your experience here would you translate to try to bring that to the people and to the government of South Sudan?
Oh, thank you for your question. That is a good question. What I learned in America, America is a great nation that bring us together, black and yellow and white together, and live under one constitution. And that actually the thing that we learn in the United States. America is a good example that could be actually be a blueprint to the other nation in the world, especially in the case of South Sudan. The case of South Sudan has been a tribal lines. It's no longer racism. Because in America, we talk about something called racism. If you go to Africa also, you talk about the deep racism actually have been put in a tribal line. If you don't belong to my tribe, you have no business with me. You have no right in the country. The majority tribe have to abuse the minority tribe, which actually very much, they are all of them African. But actually the leaders draw the line between the tribe and divide the community or the race, who is actually black people. In America, we don't have that. In America, we complain about things that we can solve it. because we have a system in place. We have a constitution in place. We have way that we can change things in America, but in Africa and other dictatorship countries, there's no way you can change things, because it's one way, is the way or highway. Because a lot of these dictators, they have no excuses for human rights. They don't even care about whether you're black or white. They don't even care whether you are blue or yellow. They just want to make sure that things have to go in that way, in that family way, otherwise you die. So there's no comparison at all. America is a great nation that we can use as an example. I live in America here as a black young man and African slave, and I discovered my identity in America. I discovered my freedom in the United States. I have learned that in America, you can make it if you work hard. I work hard. I went to school. I graduated. I worked two jobs sometimes. I never been denied getting a job to feed my family or sending money to Africa. So we have equal opportunity in America that we don't have in Africa. I'm telling you now, in Africa, we have 100% African descent or African origin. A lot of them, they don't even get along because the system do not make them to get along. The system was designed in Africa to divide African citizens and make them vulnerable so they can take advantage of them. So you cannot compare this system, the United States of America, and the Africa system. There's no comparison. And that's why in America, we are very blessed. And we are thankful that at least people like me, they're able to gain the knowledge and go back to educate African how the human race is supposed to live, whether you're black or you are white. So here in America, let's say I talk about being in my background, being a black man in America. Here in America, if you are a black man from Chicago, you have no problem with black men from Virginia. You have no problem with black men from New Jersey. You have no black men. So you actually, better man, you are an American. And the same thing when you see somebody that is not black, you see as an American. So we didn't have that tension in the United States that we have in Africa today.
So if you can unite the people of South Sudan behind this concept of nationalism versus instead of what's happening now, which is basically tribalism. You have various tribes that are going after each other, and a lot of hatred there. If you can do that, then you should be able to turn South Sudan into a prosperous nation. Is that essentially the goal? Is unity of the people behind the nation? That sounds like
indeed that is the goal.
That sounds like the right way to go. What is the makeup right now? Would you consider it to be a very Christian versus Muslim, as far as the various tribes and sects? Is there a lot of religious consideration, or is it more geographic? Or how are the tribes how are they fighting? You know, what is their differences?
The differences is just the tribe have no differences. The differences is the leadership. The vice president come from a different tribes, and the president from different tribes. All of these are using the tribe for their own benefits. They didn't use the tribe to unite the nation. They used the tribe for their own power, so they can have a power sharing in between them. And then they left the tribe alone without support. So when we discover that, and a lot of people are talking about it, the war in South Sudan actually was a tribal war that designed by the government itself. And government lied to the internet community and said that, oh, we have a tribal issue. No, we didn't have a tribal issue. These people, they live for the longest time. These people are 99% are Christian, African, indigenous. They have a lot in common. They unite one time and fight the Islamic authoritarian in Sudan for more than 21 years. They were unite and they fight in one enemy. And then they broke away, they bought 99% to become a nation. So how would you describe these people who actually know one enemy, that they can be a tribal society? At least the leadership, who was authoritarian, actually, it was instigating that kind of war so they can stay in power, so they cannot be asked to go to election, because actually if they have peace in South Sudan, election will be called within a month from now. But because they actually want to create a little bit of chaos when they can confuse the internet community, and that they do for their own advantage. So the problem in South Sudan It's just a simple problem. You need a leader who is a unifier, who can unite them together and work for the interest of the all people, not just individual or group. You see, I learned a lot since I've been in the United States. I want you to know this. When I come to America, I do not speak English. I just pick up English here. And I learned the history of Africa right here in America. What I learned so far about the African problem, whether in Nigeria or in Congo or in Ghana, I mean, I can go on and on and on. The African problem is with the leadership Africa. The African leadership is the problem of African people. The African leadership authoritarian system who have been adapted by socialism, whether from Cuba or from Venezuela, whatever they associate with. This is the problem that's killing African for a long time. This is the system that have disadvantaged the African people. This is the same system African leaders who are silent about the slavery in Africa. They know that the slavery is going on in Africa. They don't want to talk about it. They know that the starvation is going on in Africa. They don't want to talk about it because who caused the slavery? It's them. They are the one caused this. Okay, if you caused the slavery, how would you talk about the slavery? You know, you are the one actually did it. So the problem, African know that the one enslaving their own citizen, know that the one actually disturbing the peace of African people, they keep lying and telling the lies that the European is the problem. The white man is the problem, but they know the game is actually in their hand because they're the one actually creating all this problem. So now you got a young man who was a slave and run away at the time, not seeing it all from outside. And I see it all because actually I survived by my own. No one actually came for my rescue. I made it to the United States without somebody come for my rescue. Today, I talk about a slave without leaders backing me in the country because they know I was a slave. They know that my mom and my sister, a lot of others were a slave. They don't want to talk about it because if you know your leader, who's supposed to be your leader, who's not talking about the slavery that happened to you and your family, who's supposed to talk about, who's supposed to back you up? Now I'm talking about a slave of my own and the African leadership are so silent. And my own leadership who brought a slavery for more than 21 years in South Sudan don't want to talk about it. That means they know what the game was. They know that they know the game, that they weren't actually doing this so they can silence the other community. And the reality is slavery still exists and the African Union is silent about it. And now the Western are talking about slavery here in America. We talk about the Black Lives Matter and they don't talk about the slave Lives Matter in Africa. So the question now, I have learned that I have to take on the leadership because that's something happened to me. And I don't want to offer to other people.
That is amazing. Amazing. You do see what's happening here. And I don't want this to be too controversial, but if I'm understanding correctly, you look at a lot of the complaints that we have here, other people, for example, some of these groups like Black Lives Matter, which you mentioned, they're complaining about, you know, not having this, not having that. But they have never actually experienced what you've experienced. They've never experienced the type of oppression that the people of South Sudan are experiencing every day. Would you want to tell the people, whether they're in Black Lives Matter or Antifa or whatever group, I don't want to isolate one group, what would you want to tell them here in America as far as, you know, what message would you have when they're complaining about, you know, the whatever it is that they're complaining about?
They have been spoiled. The United States spoiled these people. They have been spoiled. They have a good life. They have food. Spoiled. They have jobs. They have cars. They have their own businesses. They have their own churches. These people have been spoiled by the United States. Just let's talk about my own perspective, where I come from. I was not spoiled in my own Africa country. I was a slave in my country. And my people actually very much collaborate with the enemy to get for me to be a slave. So you know, if you want to talk, I say this, my people in America, the black folks in America, in the United States, 400 years ago, which actually was unfortunate, but that is slavery still going on. And the question, ask yourself, did they really look back and ask a question to people like me who just came from Africa? Do they willing to ask me a question? Do they willing to learn the root cause of the slavery? Do they really learn how Africans get kidnapped from the village to the market? Do they know who's responsible before Africans reach the Europe? They don't want to know that, and they don't want to know, and they don't know it. And that way, if they don't know it, somebody like me, I have to stand up to tell them who did this and who and how he did it. I know who enslaved me. I know who kidnapped me. Why a lot of these people don't want to come and ask me this question? How did you get kidnapped? And who took you? Because they know it's not a white man took me. That's why they don't want to ask me. If it was a white man that took me, it would be a camera around me today. But because it was another race, who did it? It was a Muslim man. The Muslim man came and kidnapped me in my village. And then Muslim man give himself identity to call Arabs. And the majority, they live in North Africa. Majority live in Middle East. They don't want to, black men don't want to know that. They want to know about only what's going on in Europe. They want to know what's going on in America. They don't want to know what is going on in Africa right now. They don't want to know what's going on in Nigeria. Nigeria now, they are in a chaos where they want to wipe out the Christian in Nigeria. And this is the same slavery that's going on. So yes, the slavery been going on in Africa before the European went to Africa in 14th century. The slave was going on in 9th century. So the question you ask yourself, who was a slave in Africa in 9th century before European went in 14th century? I have answer for that, but the black in America, they don't have answer for that. But I have an answer. I can tell you right now that the Arab Muslim men, the Muslim men are the ones slaving Africa for more than 5 centuries before actually you went to Africa. And there are some Muslims selling Africa to the Turkish, sell them to Iranian, sell them to Indian, send them to Chinese, send them to anywhere, and send them to Europe, and send them to Portuguese. These are some Muslim men who know how to kidnap Africans. I never see a white man, KKK, coming with the pickup truck to come and kidnap me in my village. No, because my village, you cannot drive a pickup truck over there. You got to have a camel or a horse to come and kidnap me in the village, because the horse can run across the forest, but the car cannot run across the forest. Most of you know this. Common sense can tell you the car cannot run in the forest, but the horse and camel can run in the forest, and donkey can run in the forest. That's how I got kidnapped. That I entire my family got kidnapped. And we in America here don't talk about it. No, we don't need to know it. We just want to go for 400 years ago. And that's why if we don't want to go back for the root cause, we are not solving the problem. And that's why we're still talking about what's going on in America. We get exposed in the United States. America give us enough freedom, and we don't see it yet. And that's why I'm going back to Africa for people who never had freedom until now, because I know I got enough freedom in the United States. That's why I'm going back to expand my freedom to others who are not free yet. So the question I ask these Black Lives Matter men and others who are watching this video, are you willing to sacrifice your life to put your life online like me and go to Africa with me tomorrow and save the black life in Africa so you can have your own root and learn what happened to your grandfather and your grandmother and your ancestors in Africa? They're not willing to go because they have been spoiled. They have a good life in America. They don't want to leave. They want to complain, but they don't want to go with that and pick up and go with us to Africa. They don't want to go. So that's why I say you are a hypocrite. You are a hypocrite. If you are not a hypocrite, you have to go with me to Africa. And that's why I'm going to Africa, because I'm not a hypocrite.
It's very powerful. Spoiled hypocrites. I wholeheartedly agree. Bolga Deng, I have one more question for you, but I want to make sure everybody knows how to find you. They can find you at KushDemocraticMajority.org. /freedom the book. That's where you can find your book. Is that correct? Legacy of an African Freedom Fighter?
Yes. Yes, very much. The children book is there. They can read about what happened to me and how I made it to my journey to the U.S. and in the children book and the African Freedom Fighters as well. And the Quick Democratic is a website that you can go and read about me. We have also the other South Sudan project. So these are the organizations online there. And also you can follow me on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. I'm always all over the place. My phone is there. My email is there. You can contact me anytime you want to. But indeed, my challenge is to go back and elaborate more to, you got about 9.2 million Africans still enslaved today. That's why I'm going back to elaborate those people. And we still have slavery, still exists and well alive in Africa. So there's no way that we can come and pretend that America is the baddest nation in the world. No, America is the greatest nation in the world. And we want to teach them, and that's why I'm here, to get knowledge and go back and expand my knowledge to others. And that's why they need to know that. If you don't know, you don't appreciate what you have in America, please come with me. When you come back with me next time, you would appreciate America enough, because what you're going to see there is terrible life, and people are in danger because the African leaders don't want their people to be free, because that's what they make the business of it. So the question now, I'm going to challenge African. That's what my role is.
That's amazing. For those who are listening to Bol Gai Deng's name is spelled BolGaiDeng. I hope I spelled that correct. Is that correct?
Correct.
Very good. Wanted to make sure. Okay, so my last question for you, sir, and this has been an enthralling discussion. I wish we had more time. I would love to have you on again here very soon, because I want to help. I want to support, and I think that our readers would like to be able to support your quest to essentially liberate South Sudan from its oppressors. So let's definitely schedule a future interview. But my final question for today is this. You're facing a government that has totalitarian control. This isn't just a matter of, hey, we're going to go out and call elections and it's going to be done. You have to fight to get the elections to happen. And as you said before, if the elections don't happen, it could turn back to the people to turn into a revolt. What do you see happening? What is the most likely scenario? And are you prepared for whatever comes, whether you do get to face the election and listen to the vote of the people, or if you have to rally the people to do more than just vote, because they won't be allowed to vote? What do you see going forward for South Sudan, and how are you going to help to liberate them?
Absolutely, I put one priority now, because I'm not trusting the leadership in the country. I am actually in a position where I can rally the people to go out and demand the president to resign. That is the first priority. The second priority, if election have to be called within 90 days, and I don't know what those 90 days are. Could it start maybe next month, or maybe a month from now, or a year? We are not waiting for a year from now. That's why we say we need 90 days, because 8.3 million now are dying from starvation. You have a country of 11 million people. You already have 8.3 million who are actually facing the starvation, hunger, who are dying. You have 2.4 million who are living in neighbor countries. So you already see that there's nowhere we can wait. We don't have a time to wait for these people, for 8 million to die. And that's why I demand election within 90 days. And that election have to be guaranteed by international community, that the one can monitor the election. If I know the election cannot be monitored by international community, that election will not be legitimate, it will be rigged by this leadership. That's why my option, because I already have 90% behind me, I just rallying the people. And then need security of my team to be in the ground. And that's what we're working on now. So very much, yes, possibility is to rally the people behind you and demand him to resign. That is the shortcut, and it's very easy. And you rescue the 8.3 million who are dying from hunger, so you can actually call the internet community and find a way to help them, so you can speed up the agriculture to make sure that you'll be able to feed these within another year and so. This is my position. What I'm doing here is not just for South Sudan. is the issue that has been ignored in Africa for too long. And also is the issue that have been very much ignored by international community for too long. And also it was miseducation that been going on, misinformation that been coming from Africa to the Europe. We accused the European of slavery for too long, and we did not actually hold ourselves accountable. And also we did not hold the Arabian and the Muslim accountable as African. We did not actually hold the Turkish and the Iranian accountable. We're only holding American accountable, and that is not a fair game. We need to be fair. If we really want to talk about slavery, let's be fair. Not only American did it, and not only European, French, and United Kingdom did it. Everybody was participating in. Even the sheep, African sheepdom, were part of this. Even the Muslim Africans who collaborated with their Muslim Arab friend, Arabian friend, they collaborated and made a networks. The Muslim African kidnapped the African and sell them to the Arabian Muslim. And Arabian Muslim take them to Mediterranean Sea all the way to Indian Ocean. These are the issues that face Africa that we do not talk about. So I am not just a leader of South Sudan. I am a leader going to correct the history of slavery that had miseducated, misrepresented to the world. And that's why we need to correct this.
Amazing. Amazing. Absolutely amazing. Bol Gaydeng, the future president of South Sudan, it has been a pleasure and an honor talking to you, sir. May God bless you, and may you save your people.
May God bless you too. Thank you so much for having me and with your audience.
Thank you. Take care.